Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 440, titled Triumph of the Shill, Part 4, The Gruppenführer. This is being recorded on January 5th of the year 2004, and Happy New Year. This program is going to continue with the analysis of Governor and, who knows, perhaps someday American Führer. Arnold Schwarzenegger, there are already moves afoot to enable him to pass legislation that would enable Schwarzenegger or somebody to become President of the United States. We will see what happens with that. Now, we're going to be taking a look at the Gruppenführer, Arnold Schwarzenegger. I've done a number of programs about Schwarzenegger, For the Record programs 421, 422, 429, 434, and 436. And if some of the things that I talk about in connection with Schwarzenegger seem a little odd, or if the context isn't entirely clear, please reference those other programs. They are all by now streaming on the WFMU.org/Dave Emery website, and there are detailed annotated descriptions of all of the programs to date, obviously not 440 because I'm recording that right now. In For the Record program 422, I noted Arnold Schwarzenegger's style as a professional. Schwarzenegger, by the way, is anything but stupid. He's very, very smart, very, very cunning, very evil. I would describe him, if I had to describe Schwarzenegger in one word, it would be Machiavellian. He has done his homework vis-a-vis Machiavelli and some other theoreticians who have expounded in the past on ways basically to get what you want by manipulating and perhaps when necessary screwing other people. Schwarzenegger is very adept at that, and his background is also very, very interesting indeed, ranging from his Nazi affiliations of the Nazi affiliations of his father, his unqualified and unretracted support for Kurt Waldheim, the admiration he expressed for Adolf Hitler many, many times when he was a younger man. All of this has been glossed over because he gave a bunch of money to Holocaust remembrance, and it would appear sort of the flip side of the anti-Semitism coin is all somebody has to do is to get up off of some coin and express support for Israel and or Holocaust remembrance, and people automatically assume that this person could not be a Nazi or a fascist, and that is simply not the case. It's sort of the flip side of the anti-Semitism, which is becoming extant these days and in much of the world. He is somebody who does support either Israel and or Holocaust remembrance, is thereby given a free pass. And as we've looked at in a number of broadcasts, including For the Record program 397 and For the Record 305, one of the things the Borman Group has done in the past is to give monetary support for Israel, which keeps them quiet until, in my opinion, their extinction will be requisite. I've talked about that in the past. I'll talk about it more in the future. But in 422, For the Record 422, I noted Schwarzenegger's style. Schwarzenegger is very Machiavellian, and if he wants to stick it to you, and he's good at sticking it to people, he will lead you in one direction in order to misdirect you, and then he will stick it to you. He will double back. It's what he did to Lou Ferrigno. If you really want to see where Schwarzenegger is at, just go see Pumping Iron and see what he does to Lou Ferrigno. That's the way he operates. It's the way he's always operated, and that's the way he's operating as governor or Kaiser or Führer of California. Go to For the Record 422, though, for a detailed description of what Schwarzenegger is like as a professional. And so far, politicians in California have been both cowed by Schwarzenegger's public persona, and his status as a celebrity has been used to liberal effect and considerable effect by Arnold Schwarzenegger. He also has successfully baffled the political pundits here in California, or the political operatives, with the characteristic misdirected Machiavellian style that he generally uses. He'll lead you in one direction, then double back and screw you. It's what he did with regard to announcing his candidacy. He had all of his shills float myth that he hadn't decided to run. In fact, he had, and he announced it when people really didn't have a whole lot of chance to do anything about it. And so far, His gubernatorial administration has proved to be consummately cynical, as epitomized, I think, by his decision right after being elected to settle various energy lawsuits pending in the state of California for pennies on the dollar, including lawsuits against, among others, Enron for manipulating the California energy, quote, crisis, unquote, that helped to put Schwarzenegger in office in the first place. That's discussed in For the Record program number 429. San Francisco Chronicle of Sunday, December 28th of the year 2003, had an article about Schwarzenegger's back and forth, quote, flip-flopping. It's not so much flip-flopping as this is the way Schwarzenegger operates. He will, again, at the risk of seeming a little tedious, he'll lead you in one direction, intending all along to go in another. And this is how he's always operated. It's how he's operating as a governor, and it seems to be so far baffling people who have not studied Schwarzenegger as a professional. This article, again, from the San Francisco Chronicle of Sunday, December 28th of 2003, is by Tom Chorneau of the Associated Press, C-H-O-R-N-E-A-U. It's Dateline Sacramento and headlined, Governor's Flip-Flops Worry Lawmakers, and this is not a reference to his foot gear. Subtitled, Schwarzenegger's Reversals May Be Due to His Eclectic Staff. Yeah, it also may be due to the fact that this is the way he's always operated. Anyway, the article reads in part, whether it is political inexperience or simply a bumpy start to a new administration, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger continues to exasperate lawmakers and interest groups by his sudden and inexplicable flip-flops on major policy questions. The new governor has already been criticized for breaking campaign promises to limit his fundraising, to audit the state books fully, and to conduct an independent investigation into allegations of sexual harassment against him. Now, Schwarzenegger has added to the uncertainty with a series of highly publicized reversals on key budget positions, including his funding commitments to schools, cuts proposed for the disabled, and money due to cities and counties. Some say it is too soon to draw conclusions on such flip-flops, since the administration's been in power only slightly more than a month, skipping down. But the flip-flops are hard to ignore. Those who forget the past, philosopher George Santayana noted that those who forget the past are condemned to repeat it. I would note in that context that those who never bother researching it in the first place are also condemned to repeat it. And so far, there is absolutely nothing about Arnold Schwarzenegger's conduct as a governor that should be considered surprising in the light of the way he conducted himself as a professional, going all the way back to and including his pumping iron days. You want to see what Arnold Schwarzenegger is going to be like? See Pumping Iron. Look what he does to Lou Ferrigno, and look how he boasts about it ahead of time, does it, and then sort of rubs poor Ferrigno and his family's noses in it afterward. That is Schwarzenegger. He has been dubbed by some the Gruppenführer, obviously a reference to his Germanic persona and his Nazi father's background, and also to his unabashed admiration of Adolf Hitler as expressed for many years and now basically glossed over. Arnold Schwarzenegger also was hit with a series of charges of sexual harassment shortly before the election. These came out before the election. It appears that those incidents had been gathering steam for quite some time, and they're relatively numerous in number. There has recently been a lawsuit that was filed by one of the accusers who has charged Arnold Schwarzenegger and his aides with having leaked information that she had a criminal record, and that apparently has had serious implications for her professional career. That was discussed by the San Francisco Chronicle of Tuesday, December 9th of 2003. This is an article by Bob Ijelko and Christian Bertelson of the San Francisco Chronicle. It's headlined, Governor Aborts Groping Inquiry. Subtitle, Stunt Woman Sues for Campaign Smear. And this is yet another of Arnold Schwarzenegger's flip-flops. He indicated during the campaign that there would be a full investigation of these events and a public investigation of these charges. And then, after getting elected, he announced that a private investigator, that a PI firm, but a prestigious one, would do the investigation. Now, he said there will be no inquiry at all. We're going to talk about that more in a minute, but this is characteristic of the way the Gruppenführer has flip-flopped and characteristic of the way he will lead you in one direction and then zigzag over in the other. Again, San Francisco Chronicle, Tuesday, December 9th of 2003, Governor Aborts Groping Inquiry. Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, who promised after his election to seek an independent investigation into allegations that he groped or harassed women during his acting career, has changed his mind, an aide to the governor said Monday. Quote, after consulting with legal counsel and advisors, the governor has concluded that given the political nature of the allegations, an investigation could only provide more fodder for his political opponents, unquote, said Schwarzenegger spokesman Rob Stutzman. The announcement came hours after a former movie stuntwoman sued Schwarzenegger for libel, claiming that one of his campaign operatives had smeared her after she accused the actor of sexually abusing her on two movie sets. She said the operative, Sean Walsh, had led reporters to believe that she was a convicted felon. Well, that, again, that's characteristic of Arnold Schwarzenegger's behavior. Again, just watch Pumping Iron and or read the information that is presented, listen to or read the information presented in For the Record 422, including information from the unauthorized biography of Arnold Schwarzenegger by Wendy Lee. This is the way he operated. There was a very interesting case that emerged in Southern California in an altogether different context from Arnold Schwarzenegger and the groping allegations against him. But now that case, a number of interesting allegations and admissions by Anthony Pelicano has begun to merge with the Schwarzenegger groping investigation or lack thereof. This is from the New York Daily News, the Rush and Malloy column, and it in turn accesses, among other things, some information from the L.A. Weekly. This article is titled, Arnold Got Pelicano Brief on Self. It reads in part, Hollywood's hottest detective story may have a political subplot. Associates of just-jailed private eye Anthony Pelicano say that just-inaugurated Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger once hired that gumshoe to see what dirt foes might dig up if he entered the 2002 gubernatorial race. Less than a week after Pelicano turned into a 27-page file, Schwarzenegger said he wouldn't run. Less than a week after Pelicano turned into a 27-page file, Schwarzenegger said he wouldn't run, former Pelicano legman Paul Baresi tells L.A. Weekly's Nikki Fink. Curiously, Schwarzenegger announced on November 6th that he was hiring a well-respected, unquote, private investigating firm to investigate allegations he groped more than a dozen women. A former Pelicano colleague corroborated that the action star investigated himself. Pelicano told me, quote, it's already been done, unquote, the source told us. Baresi won't say what was in Pelicano's report, commissioned in April of 2001. Schwarzenegger's office didn't return calls about his alleged connection with Pelicano, who was convicted for possessing illegal explosives and is the subject of an ongoing federal wiretap investigation. Anthony Pelicano, according to information presented here, had already done an investigation of Arnold Schwarzenegger's private life, and the implication here is that basically the investigation had already taken place. One wonders whether perhaps Anthony Pelicano's and his firm were the well-respected PI firm that Schwarzenegger was contemplating utilizing in this case. I would also note that the investigation by Pelicano and Company took place in April of 2001. It was in May of 2001 that Arnold Schwarzenegger met at the Peninsula Hotel in Beverly Hills with, among others, Michael Milken and also Ken Lay, the former CEO of the now disgraced Enron, and discussed, among other things, how to sidetrack the California lawsuit that had been filed against Enron and some of the other lords of electricity in connection with the deliberate manipulation and exploitation of California's, quote, energy crisis, unquote. Again, it was that energy crisis that led to Gray Davis's ouster in Schwarzenegger's election. The energy crisis stemmed directly from the electricity deregulation that was implemented by Governor Pete Wilson, Gray Davis's predecessor, Arnold Schwarzenegger's campaign manager, advisor, and co-spokesman. And it's very interesting indeed to see that Anthony Pelicano had apparently already conducted the very investigation that Schwarzenegger was contemplating launching. One wonders whether Pellicano's legal problems had basically interdicted the planned investigation that Arnold Schwarzenegger had given wind of. Now, Anthony Pellicano was a very interesting fellow. We're going to talk about his role in, among other things, as among other things, Mark Furman's private investigator. We're also going to talk about Anthony Pellicano's efforts against the notion that there was a fourth shot in President Kennedy's assassination. And we're also going to talk about Anthony Pellicano's brief on behalf of the relatively untenable hypothesis that the 18-and-a-half-minute Watergate tape erasure could have been an accident. We're going to take a look now, though, at Anthony Pellicano's conviction on explosive charges and also the fact that he is now the focal point of a wiretap investigation. The following article is from the San Francisco Chronicle of Sunday, November 16th of 2003. This is an article by James Sterngold. It's Dateline Los Angeles, headlined, LA wiretap flaps become a potboiler of the first order. Subtitled, Scandals Widening Scope Rivals Tinseltown's Filmed Whodunits. It reads in part, when the news broke last year that the celebrity private investigator Anthony Pellicano was himself under police investigation, many here saw it as a delicious dollop of Tinseltown scandal to enliven dinner party gossip. They had no idea. The federal investigation has placed powerful lawyers and crooked cops under scrutiny amid suggestions that Pellicano may have routinely wiretapped movie stars, ex-spouses, and even nannies in an effort to tip the outcomes of legal disputes in favor of his clients. The circle of people implicated has widened by the day, making the case even more tantalizing and cliché-ridden than the best Raymond Chandler tale. The Los Angeles Police Department has already said one sergeant is under investigation for stealing confidential information from police computers and selling it to Pellicano. Now, a person with knowledge of the department has told the Chronicle that a second officer is being investigated for illegally raiding police files and providing information to Pellicano as well. In addition, nearly every day, more lawyers and people involved in litigation are acknowledging that they have been interviewed by the FBI. They have been told their conversations may have been illegally taped or have been asked about apparent tapings of the combatants in litigation battles. The investigation is a classic case of pulling a loose bit of yarn and having an entire sweater unraveled. Pellicano built what was once a thriving business and a high-profile reputation from defending a range of clients from John DeLorean to Michael Jackson. When celebrities found themselves in trouble, Pellicano was often the first person they called. And we'll touch back on John DeLorean in a couple of minutes. Continuing here, investigation, the widening scandal plays into every grainy black-and-white pulp fiction image of Los Angeles as a city run by a corrupt subterranean cabal. It began on a hot June day, the sun like a hard-boiled egg and the dishpan gray streets steaming, when a reporter named Anita Bush, a Los Angeles Times entertainment writer, headed for her parked car. On the windshield, she found a dead fish, a rose, and a note with a single word, stop. Bush had been investigating alleged ties between the actor and producer Steven Seagal and a reputed mobster. Not long after, an FBI informant taped a convicted drug dealer named Alexander Proctor confessing that he had delivered the threat. On whose behalf? He said it was a job assigned by Pellicano, who, it turned out, was working for Seagal. That led federal agents to raid Pellicano's offices on a tony stretch of Sunset Boulevard in West Hollywood. It turned into quite a fishing expedition. The agents not only found dangerous explosives in the office, Pellicano explained that an unnamed client had left plastic explosives and hand grenades with him for safekeeping, but also evidence of numerous secret and apparently illegal wiretaps. Pellicano, a flamboyant figure, had already pleaded guilty to two felony counts of illegal possession of the explosives, which included grenades that an FBI agent said had been modified so they could be used as booby traps. Adding to the high drama, Pellicano copped his plea suddenly during a lunch break in his trial last month. He is scheduled to surrender and begin his prison term Monday, but will not be formally sentenced until January. He could serve from 27 to 33 months in prison. If Pellicano cooperates with federal prosecutors to shorten his sentence, Even more fear could spread through Hollywood about other people he could implicate. But at least for now, that does not appear to be the case. He's not cooperating with us at all, one federal official said, skipping down. Investigators have also questioned Ed Mosseri, the same attorney lauded as a hero in the movie Aaron Brockovich, for his fight to help the real-life Brockovich nail a utility for poisoning the groundwater in a community near Los Angeles. The first LAPD officer implicated in the case, Sergeant Mark Arneson, was allowed to quietly retire with a full pension early last month, but is still being investigated by the district attorney for having pilfered information about celebrities from police computers for Pelicano, according to a police spokesman, Lieutenant Art Miller. One of the celebrities, by the way, that he looked into was O.J. Simpson. Another one was Michael Jackson, who, of course, is very much in the news now. What we're going to take a look at now is Pelicano's work on behalf of, first, Mark Furman in the O.J. Simpson case, and then on behalf of those who were deriding the notion or attempting to disprove the notion that there was a conspiracy in President Kennedy's assassination and that there was a conspiracy behind the erasure of the 18-and-a-half-minute Watergate tape as well. This excerpt is from For the Record Program 104. In a number of different broadcasts, including my series about the book Blood Oath by Stephen Wirth and Carl Jaspers, my series about the book Legacy of Deception by Stephen Singular, the material that I've done about the book Killing Time by Raymond Briggs and Donald Freed, and interviews with each of those authors by themselves and conference-called interviews with those authors collectively, I discussed the framing of O.J. Simpson for the murders of his ex-wife Nicole and Ron Goldman. There are numerous intelligence connections to that case, and I've discussed those in a number of different broadcasts. There's also enough information on the public record, certainly to indict Mark Furman for murder, and according to one legal professional I know, that the information that I discussed in a half-hour segment called Where Was Mark Furman on the Night of June 12, 1994, would be enough for many criminal juries to convict Mark Furman of the murders. And this is information that's on the public record, although the public was not made familiar with that record. And again, contact Spitfire for details concerning these programs. Yet another apparent intelligence connection to the O.J. Simpson case emerged in the media and when collated with some information from some texts about the assassination of President Kennedy, it develops a very interesting picture of a fellow named Anthony Pellicano, last name P-E-L-L-I-C-A-N-O. Anthony Pelicano was the private investigator who was working for Mark Furman. A bit of information about that comes from the following, and research credit on this goes to a member of the listening audience. The following is from Time Magazine's issue of September 19, 1994. This is an article by David Von Bima, B-I-E-M-A, and I may be mispronouncing that last name. It's headlined, The Other Circus, subtitled, As Prosecutors Seek a Life Sentence for O.J. Simpson, A grand jury hears evidence against his pal, Al Cowlings. And skipping down, we read of Anthony Pelicano. Pelicano, however, confirmed that he was connected to the Simpson case. He is working for Mark Furman, the LAPD detective who found the mysterious bloody glove at O.J.'s Brentwood Mansion and has been accused by defense sources of planting the evidence to implicate the football great. And so that, again, about Anthony Pelicano's work on behalf of Mark Furman. Anthony Pelicano has an interesting track record, including his testimony before the House Select Committee on Assassinations, in which he cast aspersions on the Dallas Police Department motorcycle tape recording of the shots in President Kennedy's assassination, which gave very clear evidence of a fourth shot coming from the grassy knoll. The following information was researched for us by a member of the listening audience. This comes from a book which I consider to be a modified limited hangout and something of a diversion. It's called Contract on America, subtitled The Mafia Murder of President John F. Kennedy. It's by David E. Scheim, last name S-C-H-E-I-M, published by Schepolsky Publishers Incorporated, New York, and copyright 1988. There certainly were organized crime elements involved in all of our political assassinations, but the mafia does not control the media, the Pentagon, and the CIA, and any institution which could be viewed as the author of President Kennedy's assassination must have been able to effect a cover-up of one type or another, controlling all of those institutions, and the mafia cannot do that. They certainly were involved, but they were not the executive element. So those books, such as this one, which attempt to maintain that the mafia did it on quote-unquote are guilty of an incomplete reporting of the facts. Nonetheless, however, there is a very interesting detail in here about Anthony Pelicano. And the acoustical determination here was the acoustical determination of this tape. And again, this tape was made by the Dallas Police Department and came from an open microphone on one of the motorcycles in President Kennedy's motorcade. This acoustic and the information was reported by, and I'll repeating this, after reviewing that, reading the text here, rather, I should say, after reviewing the new acoustical work, Dr. Barger was recalled to testify. He concurred that, quote, the probability of this thing being a shot from the grassy knoll was 95% or better, unquote. This acoustical determination by Weiss, Ashkenazi, and Barger of a grassy knoll shot was disputed by three subsequent critiques. The first was presented unsolicited to the House Assassinations Committee by Anthony Pelicano, a private investigator from Chicago. And in addition to muddying the waters with regard to the House Select Committee on Assassinations investigation of Kennedy's death, or perhaps alleged investigation would be a better word, Anthony Pelicano also helped to muddy the waters in connection with the famous 18-minute gap on one of the Watergate tapes that were made by former President Richard Nixon. This famous 18-minute erasure was concluded by electronic analysis to have been a deliberate erasure. But once again, Anthony Pelicano showed up in the context of the Watergate investigation and disputed the finding that the 18-minute gap was made deliberately. He said it was accidental. I would note that among the many evidentiary tributaries running between Watergate and the Kennedy assassination concerns one of the key figures in Jim Garrison's investigation, a veteran U.S. intelligence operative and electronics expert named Gordon Novell. Novell was initially worked on behalf of Jim Garrison in New Orleans, later broke with Garrison and became a target of Garrison's investigation. And Gordon Novell maintains that he was initially solicited by the Nixon White House to study the feasibility of erasing the Watergate tapes using a degaussing gun. Novell maintains that he never actually erased the Watergate tapes. However, in a 1984 interview with Gordon Novell, when I asked him whether he did, so in other words, you deny having erased the Watergate tapes, and Gordon Novell said cryptically, quote, only because they didn't pay me, unquote. Make of that what you will. I would note that he continues to steadfastly deny that he erased the Watergate tapes. Connections between Watergate and the Kennedy assassination, again discussed in The Guns of November, Part 3, and also in a miscellaneous archive show entitled Richard Nixon's Greatest Hits, available from Spitfire. Back to Anthony Pelicano, the private investigator who worked for Mark Furman, and his work in casting doubt on the deliberate nature of the 18-minute tape gap. We read the following from the book High Treason that was authored by Robert Groden and Harrison Edward Livingston. It was published by the Conservatory Press of Baltimore, Maryland, and copyright 1989. And in Groden and Livingston's High Treason, we read the following. Anthony Pelicano, a critic of the Barger study who, interestingly enough, had criticized Bolt, Baranek, and Newman's, Barger's employer, previous findings that the famous 18-minute gap on the Nixon tape was a deliberate erasure, said, quote, I'm sure there was a conspiracy, unquote. Well, there was definitely a conspiracy behind Kennedy's assassination, as there was behind the erasing of the Watergate tapes. There was also a conspiracy behind the framing of O.J. Simpson and the murder of Ron and Nicole as well. Again, in some of the aforementioned broadcasts, the series on Blood Oath, the series on Legacy of Deception, interviews with Stephen Wirth, Stephen Singular, and Donald Freed, both individually and collectively, I discussed the many intelligence connections to the O.J. Simpson case. That again from For the Record program number 104. And again, Anthony Pelicano was the fellow who done the investigation for Arnold Schwarzenegger, and that may very well have been the private investigator he was alluding to. That concludes side one of For the Record program number 440, Triumph of the Shill, part four, The Gruppenfuhrer, being recorded on January 5th of 2004. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.